From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
And welcome to the Friday edition of Washington Watch. Eben Fowler sitting in for Tony Perkins today. We've got a big show lined up for you today as we head into the weekend. First, the Equal Rights Amendment. You remember that? The ERA. Well, it's rearing its ugly head once again. We thought once the late Phyllis Schlafly defeated it years ago, we were done with it. And to talk about what's happening and how women are being used as props and pawns is Family Research Council's only Petrina Mosley, Family Research Council's Director of Life, Culture, and Women's Advocacy. That's in our first segment. Then at 22 past the hour, I will share three compelling sound bites from Secretary of State Mike Pompeo's speech yesterday in Cairo, Egypt, and with a little bit of helpful analysis. As you know, if you've been listening to this broadcast, Tony Perkins just returned from Cairo with a delegation of American evangelical leaders who met with the Egyptian president. Pretty neat. Then at half past the hour, we'll address the most pro-abortion state bill that's set to pass in New York, thanks to the so-called leadership of Democrat Governor Andrew Cuomo. Not surprisingly, Hillary Clinton was there for the pictures. Jason McGuire, executive director of the New York Family Research Foundation, joins us from Albany, New York. And then in our last segment, that's the time when you'll have an opportunity to call in. We'll be talking about President Trump's visit to our southern border yesterday. I bet you thought we were not going to get to that one, but that were the best for last, I guess, as he urges us to call our member of Congress. And I'll give you that phone number when we get down to that segment. And ask for the measly $5.7 billion for border security and the wall. Ira Melman of the Foundation for American Immigration Reform will be my guest, and that will be a very interesting discussion. Remember the TonyPerkins.com website, Tony's Twitter handle, at T Perkins. Mine is at Eben Fowler. We love to hear from you, love to hear your comments. And we'll also tell you about how you can listen to this program after the fact, as well as past programs from Washington Watch. Well, let's get going here. A committee of lawmakers in Virginia has just voted for the Equal Rights Amendment. You know, it kind of reminds me of that scene from one of those Monty Python movies that says, I'm not dead yet. Well, the ERA we thought was dead, but apparently it is trying to resurrect its ugly self. That was the 1970s measure that would supposedly ban discrimination on the basis of sex across the United States. However, the deadline for getting 38 states to approve the proposed amendment was back in, you guessed it, 1982. 38 states being three-fourths of the states required. My guest coming up right now on Washington Watch is Petrina Mosley. She's Family Research Council's Director of Life, Culture, and Women's Advocacy. And she says the Equal Rights Amendment is not about women. It's really a smokescreen for abortion. We're going to find out all about that. Petrina, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I understand you're not sitting across the table from me. You're sitting across the country. You're sitting in Washington, D.C. in Tony Perkins' studio there at Family Research Council headquarters. So we're glad to have you along today.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm happy to be here. It's been a long week and a long battle. The last time I thought I would see a resurrection was reading it about Jesus in the Gospels. But now apparently we're having to deal with it with the ERA.
All right. Well, give our listeners a little bit of background. Now, I kind of touched on it in the introduction, but first of all, what was the intention of the thing? And tell us just a little bit about the battle and the deadlines and all that, and then we'll bring it up to present day in the state of Virginia.
Well, the ERA, the Equal Rights Amendment, was proposed originally in 1923, and that was during the time of the suffrage movement where women were getting the right to vote. But then it kind of just laid there, and it made its way back into public eye once Congress decided to take it up in the 70s. And so in 72, they brought it back, and they brought it back with stipulations. As many people know, you have to have at least two-thirds of a majority vote to even get a ratification in passed, to even get to the states.
Yeah, so through Congress.
Through Congress, right. And then the second way is for the states to call a convention, and they have to have two-thirds of that as well, of their legislature doing that. And in the time, they had 35 states, and then five of those states rescinded their ratification. But they acknowledged that there was a deadline and that was in place in the Equal Rights Amendment, saying that you have 7 years to have your states ratify it. If they don't, then it's dead. And even on top of that, you have 5 states that said, well, we changed our mind. We don't want to do this now. Mm-hmm. So it got knocked down from 35 to 30 states.
Yeah.
But over time, certain states decided to take it up in their legislature. And as recently as of May, Illinois became the 37th state to formally approve the Equal Rights Amendment. And now Virginia is into the fray to be the 38th state. So that is where we're at presently. Susan B. Anthony, as well as FRC and Students for Life and Equal Forum, we all did a press conference together on this yesterday to educate people on why the Equal Rights Amendment is a bad amendment and that it is not really about women. It is about abortion. And in this bill, this amendment, rather, it eliminates sex distinction. And ironically, it would do away with any protections we've already gained that would protect women that have been gained over the 70s and the 80s. So it is a very bad bill. It also is a backdoor for abortion. In this case, with the ERA, it would say that any law that disproportionately affects a gender would be discriminatory, which would mean, okay, a woman is the only one that could get pregnant. Therefore, any bans or restrictions you place on abortions, especially as we've seen successfully been done at the state level, would be overturned.
Yeah, now so, that's one of the big dangers, too, Katrina, that I've heard about is that, and actually there are efforts in some states, in particular the state of Kansas, where they're trying to find this supposed constitutional right from, this is from the Kansas Constitution, a constitutional right for abortion that they've found somewhere back in the 1800s. It's nuts. But that ERA, in a similar fashion as you've just said, could potentially eliminate all of the abortion restrictions that have been worked on so hard by organizations like National Right to Life and the statewide Right to Life organizations. For instance, things like notification periods, parental consent, and all of those things, right, essentially, as I understand, could be tossed out. Is that right?
That is correct, and that's actually what happened in Connecticut in the case of Doe versus Mayer. The Connecticut Supreme Court said that since only a woman can become pregnant, discrimination against pregnancy by not funding abortions is sex-oriented discrimination. So the court concluded that the regulations restricting abortions violated the Connecticut's Equal Rights Amendment. The same thing happened in New Mexico when NARAL filed their case there as well. And in the light of New Mexico's ERA, the state cannot differentiate between abortions that were medically necessary and ones that were not medically necessary because they don't do the same thing for men in their procedures. So it told the state that it had to pay for elective abortions under Medicaid. So we've already seen this play out. We've already seen pro-abortion groups in the courts who have already admitted that the ERA is a tool to preserve abortion.
Yeah,
so this
then,
is something that is very, very serious.
Well, and abortion is certainly the most egregious situation that surrounds this topic of the ERA. And in a later segment here in the broadcast, we're going to be talking about Governor Cuomo's attempt to pass an extremely liberal abortion law, if you will, or legislation in the state of New York. It boggles my mind that this abortion is a sacrament to these people, and it is something that they fight so hard for. In fact, part of the Kavanaugh fight, the most recent Supreme Court nominee, was based on the life issue, I think. These people,
yes,
just don't want to see their abortions taken away. But, you know, one of the things that would solve this problem is if people would respect life, right? I mean, that's kind of what it gets down to.
Absolutely. And the pro-abortion movement, they will use any door or create a door themselves or use any prop, even if it's women, to preserve abortion. And here's something that's interesting. The majority opinion of Roe, written by Justice Blackmun, it is laced with eugenic ideology. And it's even been acknowledged by Ruth Bader Ginsburg that, and I quote, saying that, "I thought Roe was about population growth and the growth of populations that we don't want too many of. So when you really think about this, could it be that it's more than just, you know, the left hates babies, to put it simply? Is it that abortion has been successful at extinguishing nearly 60 million human beings from our country? And by design, it has targeted our Black and poor minority communities. I think it's interesting.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And now let's move to another potential thing. And I listened to a little bit of that press conference that you referred to earlier from yesterday. And there was discussion even about such things as and this may be a little bit far-fetched, but of course, you know, some people might say that with passage of ERA, that the loss of abortion restrictions is far-fetched. But we've already, as you said, we've already seen it happen in various states across the country. But here's one that should be of real concern if there's any validity to this. And that is that you know, Social Security, there are things called spousal benefits. So let's say a woman has worked, has stayed at home to take care of her kids and raise her family, and she has not on her own qualified for Social Security. But with her husband, she has been able to. And so she has what's called spousal benefits. My understanding is that one of the potential ramifications of this thing would be that spousal benefits would be eradicated. Now, that would be pretty outlandish, but, you know, this gives you a sense, I think, of some of the bad things that could happen. Are there any other things like that, in addition to abortion, that this ERA might cause down the road?
Yeah, that is actually, that's a potential, and that could be the implication of not really defining sex in the ERA. The term sex could be interpreted to provide legal rights on the basis of sexual orientation or gender identity, and that could also hurt religious liberty and conscience protection issues. That puts, when you don't define equality, when you don't define gender and sex, especially today where that seems to be misunderstood, you get yourself into trouble into other issue areas, and that ironically hurts women. We've already achieved a certain amount of protections through the law over the past years that gives us maternity leave and equal pay and spousal benefits. So all the laws that we have on books right now that have been defined by sex will be overturned or litigated because of the passage of the ERA, which says you cannot discriminate on the basis of sex. So it eliminates all sex distinction. And I don't know about you, but I don't want the government putting their hands in defining sex, especially when they haven't been able to get that right lately. In the 70s, they couldn't foresee the discussion that we would be having today. And this is where it's really important to have a moral compass. It affects everything. And that's why the ERA is bad. It is disingenuous and it has no moral compass. And all legislators in Virginia should oppose this bill.
That's right. Well, thanks for the work that you and others are doing on this. We've been talking with Patrina Mosley, who's with FRC from the FRC studios in Washington, D.C. Thanks very much, Patrina.
Thank you.
Well, you're listening to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I'm guest hosting today. This is Evan Fowler coming from the headquarters of Bot Radio Network in the heart of America, Kansas City. If you'd like to catch the whole show, you can find it at TonyPerkins.com. Coming up next, I'll share with you three sound bites from Secretary of State Mike Pompeo's speech from yesterday in Cairo, Egypt. Thanks for hanging in there. We'll see you right after the break.
Myth and folklore have influenced our civilization for centuries. Some of these myths can be wondrous tales of fantasy that inspire us from childhood, such as unicorns and the ever-beloved elf on a shelf. Others, however, can be detrimental to our well-being, from the Loch Ness Monster to big tax refunds. Today, the myths surrounding abortion have become part of such vexations that plague our society. Since 1973, these abortion myths have grown a substantial foothold in developing a climate of fear, misinformation, and a culture of death in the United States. In FRC's new analysis, learn whether most Americans support abortion on demand, and if a fetus does in fact feel pain in the womb. Join us as we debunk these myths and find the truth to secure a future for the culture of life. Visit frc.org/myths.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
The world on our horizon isn't like the days I knew. Gone are the days of writing with fresh ink on thick paper and the swift crack of a letter opener. Homemade meals now replaced by fancy robots trying to figure out how often I buy organic goji berries. I don't even know what a goji berry is. My church started offering free Wi-Fi and changed their name from First Baptist to Radiant Water Life something or other. They even started posting video sermons recorded on wood pallet backgrounds that sync directly to a Dropbox that I have yet to locate. Thankfully, there's a silver lining to all this newfangled technology. Family Research Council's Stand Firm app. Put down your quill and contact your legislators directly from your smartphone or tablet. Share legislative alerts with your contacts and connect with like-minded Christians about the latest current events. Read the Washington Update and listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. This thing's got it all, buddy boy. Keep your cool and help secure our future at frc.org/app.
Welcome back to the Washington Watch Friday edition. Eben Fowler with Bot Radio Network sitting in for Tony Perkins today. And here in this next segment, we're going to be listening to some sound bites from Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. He gave a speech, quite an interesting speech, yesterday from Cairo, Egypt. And in it, there was a lot of, shall we say, repudiation of the previous administration and some of the harm, some of the damage that that the former president did, not only to our reputation around the world, but some of the results of that, in some cases, in many cases, loss of life from some of the instability that was created. Well, as you know, Tony just returned from a recent trip to Egypt where he joined other American evangelical leaders to meet with President El-Sisi. They discussed the importance of religious freedom for Christians and other religious minorities in that Muslim-majority nation. And yesterday, as I mentioned, Secretary of State Pompeo gave an important speech from Cairo. It was titled, A Force for Good, America Reinvigorated in the Middle East. And we're going to be listening to three sound bites from that speech. So we'll set up the first one. In the first one, from the beginning of his 25-minute speech, Secretary of State Pompeo was surprisingly open and unapologetic about his own evangelical Christian faith. And he has segued into the theme of his speech that America is a force for good in the Middle East. For Pompeo, who's traveled extensively throughout the Middle East, being in Egypt this month was especially meaningful. Here's cut one.
I've had the good fortune to be a frequent visitor here to Egypt and the Middle East as Secretary of State. In my prior role as CIA Director, I was here with some frequency, and I came here, too, as a member of Congress. Every time I come, I get to see something new, something wonderful. This trip is especially meaningful for me as an evangelical Christian coming so soon after the Coptic Church's Christmas celebrations. This is an important time. We're all children of Abraham, Christians, Muslims, Jews. In my office, I keep a Bible open on my desk to remind me of God and his word and the truth. And it's the truth, lowercase t, that I'm here to talk about today. It is a truth that isn't often spoken in this part of the world, but because I'm a military man by training, I'll be very blunt and direct today. America is a force for good in the Middle East. We need to acknowledge that truth, because if we don't, we make bad choices now and in the future. And our choices, the choices we make today, have consequences for nations and for millions and millions of people, for our safety, for our economic prosperity, for our personal freedoms, and those of our children.
So that's pretty neat. Our Secretary of State is unapologetic about his Christian faith, the fact that he keeps a Bible open on his desk. I think that we can be very thankful for that. It also should remind us to pray for Mr. Pompeo, that he would have continued wisdom in the very, very important job that he does. And he's really, really done some incredible things in the short time that he's been Secretary of State. In the next clip, Secretary of State Pompeo repudiates former President Barack Obama, although not by name. Listen for the phrase, quote, another American stood before you, as Pompeo unloads his distaste for Obama's worldview and foreign policy perspective. The world is a different place from 2009 when President Obama first kicked off his apology tour in Egypt. And, you know, we've heard about the apology tour many, many times. 10 years later now, 2019, Secretary Mike Pompeo is making it quite clear that the only thing America should be apologizing for are the mistakes of the last administration. Secretary Pompeo ticked off a long list of the Obama administration's mistakes, including being timid when the world needed strength. But he promised America has learned from those failures. That new beginning, he explained, is helping to lead to a revival of trust, stability, and religious liberty. Cut to.
And at this critical moment, America, your longtime friend, was absent too much. Why? Because our leaders gravely misread our history and your historical moment. These fundamental misunderstandings set forth in this city in 2009, adversely affected the lives of hundreds of millions of people in Egypt and all across the region. Remember, it was here in this city, that another American stood before you. He told you that radical Islamist terrorism does not stem from an ideology. He told you that 9/11 led my country to abandon its ideals, particularly in the Middle East. He told you that the United States and the Muslim world needed, quote, a new beginning, end of quote. The results of these misjudgments have been dire. In falsely seeing ourselves as a force for what ails the Middle East, we were timid in asserting ourselves when the times and our partners demanded it. We grossly underestimated the tenacity and viciousness of radical Islamism, a debauched strain of the faith that seeks to upend every other form of worship or governance. ISIS drove to the outskirts of Baghdad as America hesitated. They raped and pillaged and murdered tens of thousands of innocents. They birthed the caliphate across Syria and Iraq and launched terror attacks that killed all across continents.
Well, in this final soundbite from Secretary of State Pompeo's speech yesterday again from Cairo, Egypt, he commends Egyptian President el-Sisi for promoting religious freedom. The secretary made a point of praising the Egyptian president for his work advancing a fundamental human right barely even acknowledged under President Obama. Later, he made a point of telling reporters that when it came to protecting Christians, America is with them. Cut three.
I also applaud President Sisi's efforts to promote religious freedom, which stands as an example for all leaders and all peoples of the Middle East. I was happy to see our citizens wrongly convicted of improperly operating NGOs here, finally be acquitted. And we strongly support President Sisi's initiative to amend Egyptian law so that this does not happen again. More work certainly needs to be done to maximize the potential of the Egyptian nation and its people. I'm glad that America will be a partner in those efforts.
So, you know, we can be, again, very thankful that we have a Secretary of State who says it like it is, tells it like it is, and is not afraid to speak the truth. And, you know, I don't even think we can truly get a clear understanding of what a difference this kind of speech and attitude make versus where we were before. Well, you're listening to the Washington Watch broadcast. Eben Fowler sitting in for Tony Perkins. We've got a couple more very interesting segments coming up next. We're going to be talking with Jason McGuire of the New York Family Research Foundation about an egregious law that Governor Cuomo wants to put into effect there in the state of New York. It's one of his priorities, believe it or not. So we'll be talking about that coming up in the fourth segment. We'll be taking your calls as we talk about the border wall. Again, Eben Fowler sitting in for Tony Perkins today on this Friday edition of Washington Watch. Stay with us.
Thank you.
Myth and folklore have influenced our civilization for centuries. Some of these myths can be wondrous tales of fantasy that inspire us from childhood, such as unicorns and the ever-beloved elf on a shelf. Others, however, can be detrimental to our well-being, from the Loch Ness Monster to big tax refunds. Today, the myths surrounding abortion have become part of such vexations that plague our society. Since 1973, these abortion myths have grown a substantial foothold in developing a climate of fear, misinformation, and a culture of death in the United States. In FRC's new analysis, learn whether most Americans support abortion on demand, and if a fetus does in fact feel pain in the womb. Join us as we debunk these myths and find the truth to secure a future for the culture of life. Visit frc.org/myths.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Evan Fowler, guest hosting today for Tony Perkins. Up next, we're going to be talking about a new law in New York State. New York State is ready to enact one of the most liberal abortion laws in the country, one that would allow certain late-term procedures and erase the practice from the penal code. The Reproductive Health Act, as it's called, appears to be on the fast track for approval in the Democrat-controlled state Senate, which in recent history has been a pro-life bulwark against the more liberal State Assembly. Joining me now on Washington Watch to put it all in perspective is Jason McGuire, Executive Director of Family Research Council's affiliate state organization called the New York Family Research Foundation. Jason, do I have the name of the organization right there, first of all?
Yeah, that's our educational arm. I also am the director of our lobbying organization, New Yorkers for Constitutional Freedoms. Good to be with you.
Thanks for joining us today. All right, give us the lowdown on this. You know, I heard an announcement, or I think I saw something in the news a couple of weeks ago after Cuomo was elected, did his swearing-in ceremony, that among several priorities, one of them was global warming. Well, a big surprise. But the other one was to have some of the most liberal abortion laws in the country. What's going on there in New York, and why does New York keep electing people like this?
Well, I have to tell you, we're really suffering the consequences of the most recent election, where Democratic Socialists are now rising to power here in New York State. We now have overwhelming Democratic majorities, both in the Assembly and in the Senate, our two houses. And, of course, the governor is a Democrat. And so there is no check and balance here in New York any longer. And now the political paybacks are coming. And so the likes of Planned Parenthood are receiving what they were hoping for. This radical expansion of abortion is just one of the items that will be coming down the pike this legislative session.
All right. Tell us what the Reproductive Health Act is, how it differs from where you've been before, and what kind of impact it might have.
Sure. This bill is probably better understood by many of your listeners as Governor Cuomo's late-term Abortion Expansion Act. That's essentially what this is. It would allow abortions to be performed by medical personnel other than physicians. That's just a position that does not help women's health. It would take abortion-related crimes off the books in cases where there's pregnant women miscarrying after being assaulted, and so it doesn't help victims of domestic violence. It would allow third trimester abortions for any reason, and essentially, you know, if a woman feels like she is troubled or cannot afford a child, it would allow abortion in that circumstance. and perhaps most heinous, is it would allow for the legality for babies that are born alive following late-term abortions to be denied medical care. It's
wow.
a radical proposal.
That is radical, and it's evil. And why is it happening in this country today when, you know, back in 1973, we might have been able to give maybe some of the Supreme Court justices a little bit of an excuse because of where medical technology was. But that was a long time ago. We've got 4D ultrasound. We understand more about the whole process of, you know, where life comes from and what happens. There, really, this is an indictment on anybody who is in a position who would support anything like this that this governor is proposing. You know, y'all are backwards medically. You don't even understand medicine. You don't understand basic physiology. How in this day and age, Jason, can people even do these kinds of things?
Willful blindness. I mean, there's no other rationale for it. You described it as evil. I would agree with you. I believe the legislators here have sold their souls, essentially, for political advancement, and that's what's happening. They cannot deny in that window to the womb what they are doing with this legislation, but they're doing it anyways to further their own political ambitions. And that's what Governor Cuomo, and I hate to be so craven about it, but that's what Governor Cuomo is all about, is advancing himself at the expense of these unborn babies.
You know, Kathleen Gallagher, director of Catholic Action Network for the New York State Catholic Conference, told The Washington Times this would change late-term abortion status so that after 24 weeks, abortions are available for the life and health of the mother. And those following jurisprudence know that health means just about anything, unquote. Does that essentially describe at least one of the tenets of this thing?
Yeah, Captain Gallagher is a great ally in this fight. She's right on that point. Essentially, that's what will happen here is, again, if a mother feels she cannot afford a child, if she feels stressed by the pregnancy, the courts will allow that to be the definition of health. We're not talking about her physical health, her physical life on the line. We're talking about, you know, a woman who is stressed at having a baby. Well, that describes every couple that has ever gone through a pregnancy. There are moments of stress.
And, you know, anybody who's been involved in the pro-life issue for any time whatsoever understands what the health of the mother is about. It's a loophole that you can drive a Mack truck through, as some people have said, and it is actually not a restriction at all in no way, shape, or form. Well, okay, where is this bill? Where does it sit? Has it passed, or are there still some things that need to happen for it to pass?
It hasn't moved at all this legislative session. We just got started. But it is anticipated that it will move in some committees next week and that it will move to the floor of the Senate and the Assembly on the anniversary of the Roe decision on January 22nd. I will admit the odds are stacked against us with the overwhelming majorities, but we believe that but with God, anything is possible.
That's right. And, you know, we need to shame those legislators. They should be ashamed of themselves for supporting something like this. And hopefully, you know, you can garner folks in the state to pull together, to work together. And you're right. You know, even it's a David and Goliath thing where you've got the legislature stacked against you. But thanks so much, Jason, for the work that you're doing. And just 10 seconds. Tell us what our listeners can do to help.
Well, they can take action at albanyupdate.com. That's Albany's our news update, albanyupdate.com.
Albanyupdate.com. Jason McGuire of the New York Family Research Foundation, thanks so much again for the work that you're doing and for taking time to tell us about it today. You're listening to the Washington Watch program. This is Evan Fowler. I'm your guest host. And if you'd like to catch the whole show, you can go to tonyperkins.com. We'll be right back to talk about the border wall.
The world on our horizon is like the days I knew. Gone are the days of writing with fresh ink on thick paper and the swift crack of a letter opener. Homemade meals now replaced by fancy robots trying to figure out how often I buy organic goji berries. I don't even know what a goji berry is. My church started offering free Wi-Fi and changed their name from First Baptist to Radiant Water Life something or other. They even started posting video sermons recorded on wood pallet backgrounds that sync directly to a Dropbox that I have yet to locate. Thankfully, there's a silver lining to all this newfangled technology. Family Research Council's Stand Firm app. Put down your quill and contact your legislators directly from your smartphone or tablet. Share legislative alerts with your contacts and connect with like-minded Christians about the latest current events. Read the Washington Update and listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. This thing's got it all, buddy boy. Keep your cool and help secure our future at frc.org/app.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Myth and folklore have influenced our civilization for centuries. Some of these myths can be wondrous tales of fantasy, from unicorns to the ever-beloved elf on a shelf. Others, however, can be detrimental to our well-being. Today, the myths surrounding abortion have become part of such vexations that plague our society. In FRC's analysis, 10 Myths on Abortion, join us as we debunk these myths and find the truth to secure a future for the culture of life. Visit frc.org/myths.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to our other free resources, go to frc.org/connect.
Well, you're listening to the final segment now of the final edition of Washington Watch for the week, except for, of course, the weekend edition. This is Evan Fowler. I'm guest hosting today for Tony Perkins, and glad to be here. This next segment, our last segment, we're going to be talking about probably the hottest news story that's out there that has been, and that's been the case for a while, and that's talking about border security. Let me give you a phone number here first, because we'd like to hear from you a little bit later in the segment. The number is 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. Well, my guest right now, Ira Melman of the Federation for American Immigration Reform, he's an expert on the border. He's an expert on immigration, and glad to have him on board with Washington Watch today. Ira, thank you for joining us.
Good to be here. Thank you.
All right. Well, I'd like to hear, first of all, there seems to be some discussion, some disagreement about whether or not we have a crisis on the border. Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer the other night, they looked like the Bobbsey twins there in front of the podium, and they were trying to tell us that this is a manufactured crisis. Tell us what is really going on.
Well, this is not a manufactured crisis. The Border Patrol apprehended more than 500,000 people coming across the border illegally just this last year. 500,000 people trying to sneak into the country, and we don't know how many actually successfully got in, but that certainly constitutes a crisis in the minds of most people. We also have massive abuse of our political asylum system. You have people showing up at the border offering just patently bogus claims for political asylum, knowing that they'll get into the country, they'll get a court date, you know, several years down the line, and in the meantime, they can disappear. You've got people dragging their kids through hostile terrain to get to the border of the United States because under a judicial order that was issued by a judge a few years ago, they know kids are essentially a get-out-of-jail-free card. So we have all sorts of things. Most of the problems are our own making, and we need to resolve them. And certainly a border security barrier, whether you call it a fence, a wall, whatever you want to call it, it is essential because once people get their 2 feet on U.S. soil, they automatically qualify for a whole range of rights that they don't have if they're standing just on the other side of the border.
Well, that leads me to another question, too, and that is when you talk about rights that when they put their feet on American soil, How much do we spend every year for, and I may not have a complete list here, but for health care, for education, for whatever, maybe for welfare, what kind of dollars are we talking about with respect to people who are here illegally?
Well, we have done some estimates, and I should point out that this includes not just the illegal immigrants themselves, but their U.S.-born children who, under the current interpretation of the 14th Amendment, are considered U.S. citizens. But the total is about $135 billion a year at the federal, state, and local level. If you net out the taxes that are collected from illegal aliens, the money collected directly, if they're working with bogus Social Security numbers that are deducted from their paychecks, just sort of the incidental taxes like sales taxes, it nets out at about $116 billion a year. And this, you know, is a recurring cost. Constructing a border barrier is a one-time cost, and it's a significant cost, but it's a lot less than what we're paying per year to pay for the people who are in the country illegally and their dependents. And it's not a recurring cost. Once it's built, it's built.
Now, getting back to Schumer and others, you know, they have said, Schumer and Pelosi and those who are opposed to President, I'm not going to say that they're opposed to President Trump's wall. They're opposed to President Trump. That's really what this is all about. But they say things like, well, a wall is immoral. Well, I heard just not two, 3 hours ago, I was at lunch and listening to a radio broadcast, and I heard sound bites from Chuck Schumer, from Hillary Clinton, from Bill Clinton, and several other Democrats, Barack Obama from 2005 and one other year, who were talking about how important it was to have funding for a border barrier, a border wall. And now they're saying, in this case, Chuck Schumer and others are saying it's immoral. What's going on?
Well, you know, I should point out, in addition to Chuck Schumer, the wall was authorized back in 2006 in legislation that was passed by Congress. It passed the Senate with 80 votes. And in addition to Chuck Schumer voting for that, then Senator Barack Obama, then Senator Hillary Clinton, then Senator Joe Biden, they all voted for authorizing the construction of 700 miles of secure fencing along the border. Now we're, 13 years later, and they're calling it immoral. There is nothing immoral about protecting the sovereignty of your country. All we are doing is trying to discourage people from coming to the United States illegally in the first place. And, you know, we're seeing evidence, the caravan that came up from Central America earlier, or actually late last year, they went to the border between Tijuana and San Diego. There is a wall there courtesy of President Bill Clinton. He put that wall up there in the 1990s, and for the most part, they have not been able to get across. And many of them are giving up and deciding it's time to go home. What we need is deterrence. The best way to enforce any law is to convince people there's no point in trying to break it in the first place. And if people understand that you're not just going to come up to the border, walk across and set your feet on U.S. soil, and then claim that you have a right to remain here in this country, they will think twice and three times before risking their lives, investing their life savings to get a smuggler to bring them to the United States. That is the most effective and humane way to enforce our immigration laws. And the most effective and humane way also happens to be the most moral way.
And, you know, I talked about Democrats there, but I think, and I'd like you to maybe fill us in on this a little bit, too. It's not just Democrats. It's some Republicans and a lot of people in the, I guess, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. Here's the stereotype that I hear, and if correct this or adjust it, but the Democrats want votes. The Republicans and the business people want cheap labor. How true is that stereotype?
No, that's absolutely true. In our society, we always try to peg things as left-right. This has never been a left-right issue. This is the elite versus everybody else. The elite don't have to worry about their jobs being taken. They don't have to worry about their children's schools being overwhelmed by the presence of large numbers of kids who just showed up and don't speak a word of English. Interestingly, on NPR, of all places this morning, there was a report about what's happening in McAllen, Texas. And, you know, they interviewed a local Latino resident who is out there to support the wall. He said when these people come across and they bring their families, They put their kids in my kids' school, and my children lose educational opportunities. So, you know, we should not fall for this trap that, you know, this is a left-right issue or has anything to do with race. It is the elite on both sides, the economic and political elite, telling everybody else what's best for them when the people themselves know it's not good for them.
Ira, I want to take a call. We've got a caller online. His name is Brian, and he is from San Angelo, Texas. Brian, tell us a little bit about what it looks like from your perspective down there in Texas, if you will.
From the people that I associate with, we all support what the president's doing. Even a lot of the people that I would consider on the left, they're like, you know, I can't believe that they can't make a deal. But my biggest thing that I wanted to let you guys know is I was part of the last government shot down as an active duty member. And when it was coming up that it was going to happen, the people that were going to be affected about it by it were so excited because they knew they were going to get a paid vacation. Now, these are well-established people that know that it's always a possibility, so they have 6 months stored just for this purpose. And they're told this anyway from the beginning when they get their job, that it's always possible. So they actually are like, oh, government shutdown, yay, I paid vacation. Now, it stunk for us because we had to take on their workload, and then our customers that come see us have longer lines. So it does affect, but not in as bad of a way as the Democrats are trying to make it seem.
Okay, Brian, just one quick question.
The job still gets done.
Yeah, Brian, one quick question for you. How important do you think it is for us to secure the border? You live in Texas.
Everyone's affected by this negatively. It is the number one priority. And I definitely, I'm with the president. If he was to fold on this one, you know, who knows what. I think we'd have another Democrat as a president next if he was to fold on this.
Thanks,
and
Brian.
And everyone's sentiments, my...
I appreciate your call very much. Well, Ira, where do you think this is going to end up? How do you think this is going to wind up?
You know, I wish I knew. I'm not sure anybody really knows. But look, I mean, I think the American public is eventually going to get fed up with both sides. You know, nobody wants to see the government shut down. People's lives are being affected in a negative way. You know, all this requires is that the Democrats come to the table and honor past commitments. And we see this every time we go through the cycle of trying to debate immigration policy. All kinds of promises are made to the American people, and then they're broken. The promises made to the people who break the laws, those are always fulfilled. But we had Congress promise back in 2006 that they were going to put up 700 miles of secure fencing there. The promise has not been kept. And as I mentioned, many of the people who voted for that back in 2006 are still in Congress. One is the minority leader of the United States Senate today. It is time for them to step up to honor their past commitments to the American people and fund that border barrier to protect the interests of the American people. But they're not doing it because there are political interests that are pulling them in other directions, and that simply is not acceptable.
You know, as you said, there have been many, many promises made throughout through the years. And what do you think of our current? Just let's talk about the system for a legal immigrant. Tell us how that works and what kinds of things might need to be done to make that work better.
Well, the system works, but it's broken. You know, it works in a bad way. Back in the mid-1960s, we changed our immigration policies. We had had a discriminatory policy in place from the 1920s to the mid-1960s. It definitely needed to be changed. But in a deal that, you know, the Kennedy brothers, Bobby and Teddy, who were leading the effort, cut, you know, they were trying to get that off the books. And in order to convince some Southern Democrats to go along, they had to sort of come up with a scheme that could convince them that in spite of taking the offensive language out of the law, that instead they would just substitute a better way of maintaining the status quo. And so they decided that, you know, who's going to likely to have family members in this country? Well, it's, you know, the Irish and Polish and Italian immigrants who had come before. What they didn't count on was the fact that by the mid-1960s, Western Europe had fully recovered from World War II. Their economies were booming. There just wasn't the demand. Eastern Europe was behind the Iron Curtain. They might have liked to come, but they couldn't because they couldn't get out. And so we saw the inflow of people coming from Asia, from Latin America, and their relatives actually do want to come. And so we have this family chain migration where we admit people almost exclusively based on who they happen to be related to, not based on what they can contribute. And it just goes on and on. There's no check on who really can come into the United States other than the fact that you have a relative here. We need a merit-based immigration policy, one that does not discriminate for or against any particular group of people, but looks at the individual qualifications of the people who want to come and make decisions rationally. That has been proposed, but again, every bad policy has an entrenched interest that will go to the mat to support it and keep it, and this is just one more example.
Ira, let's take another caller. Joe is from Delaware, Ohio, and I think Joe would agree with you. Joe, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Thanks for your expert guests. And I do support Trump 110%. He's, one of the few politicians that have kept their promises in the last 40 years. And I wanted to say that, I lay a lot of the blame at the rhino's feet. We've had control of the House since 2010. They didn't defund Planned Parenthood. They didn't defund Obamacare, and both those organizations spent millions of dollars to defeat them in the midterms, and they didn't fund the border security. So between Boehner and Ryan, I give a lot of the blame to them. I think Trump is doing everything one person can do, fighting wars on six different fronts there, and the previous caller said he thinks he'll lose support. He won't lose my support. I can't speak for everybody. I know that I know it's a tough situation dealing with the Pelosi's and the Schumer's. It just makes you sick to see what they stand for, the destruction of America. But keep fighting the good fight. Keep the voters informed, and I think God is on our side, and I think we'll prevail in this battle. So thanks again for all you do. God bless you.
Yeah, Joe, thanks for calling. Ira, I wanted to ask you quickly here in our last couple of minutes. The president noted on the border yesterday that in the last 2 years alone, our courageous ICE officers, many of whom are with us, arrested criminal aliens charged with or convicted of 100,000 assaults just in the last year, 30,000 sex crimes, and 4,000 violent killings. Ira, are those stats correct? They're almost unbelievable.
I don't know. You'd have to get the White House to show you the sources. It's clear that you do have criminals coming across the border. The same borders that are open to, workers and women with children are also open to criminals. And we just have to take that into account. So whether the president has his statistics right, he sometimes plays fast and loose with statistics. But the bottom line is, whatever it is, we do have people coming across the border who are dangerous and pose a danger to the American people. And I just want to comment on what the caller said. I mean, the Democrats are certainly throwing sand in the gears here. But it is also true that for the past 2 years, the Republicans did have control of the White House and both houses of Congress. And they waited till Christmas Eve before they left town for the last time to bring this up. That rests with them as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So everybody gets a little bit of credit or blame or whatever it might be. Well, Ira Melman is with the Federation for American Immigration Reform. And Ira, it's been a pleasure. It's been a pleasure talking with you. Thank you so much for enlightening us today.
Thank you.
Well, this concludes the Friday edition of Washington Watch. Eben Fowler here sitting in for Tony Perkins, and you can listen for the weekend edition. Go to TonyPerkins.com for more information and to hear today's broadcast and past broadcasts. Been a pleasure being with you today. God bless. Have a great weekend.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.